You're listening to The Divorce and Your Money Show, the number one show on iTunes that discusses the complex business of divorce. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and certified divorce financial analyst. You can visit us at divorceandyourmoney.com. One of the questions that I get from you a lot, and actually that we just unfortunately have to deal with sometimes, is how do you keep your private information private? And, you know, a lot of times during divorce, you can feel, sometimes rightly and sometimes it's just a perception, that your spouse is spying on you and knows a little bit too much about what's going on in your life, even though you're separated. And worse yet is I get a panicked email from one of you that's like, oh my gosh, my now ex-spouse at this point has access to everything about me. They know your maiden name, they know your favorite color, your everything. Phone numbers, your whereabouts. It's so easy to get that information. And how do you protect yourself? How do you protect your identity? And on top of that is what you might not even realize is there is so much information being collected about you that you don't know about. From your credit card transactions, to your driving habits, to every website that you ever click on. And so today, I wanted to bring in a privacy expert, someone to guide you and tell you a little bit about what's going on in terms of your data and your information, and then also ways to protect yourself. This is a very interesting and different episode, an interview. This is with Trip Elix. He is a former private investigator and hacker. And his mentor even is one of the inventors of electronic surveillance equipment. And he's going to discuss with us how much information is really being tracked, collected, and sold about you. About you. Not only is this information being tracked about you all day, every day, but companies have access to it. And not only do companies have access to it, your ex-spouse can get access to this information for just a few dollars. And in this episode, we just scratch the surface on some of the information that's collected about you and some of the ways that you can protect your privacy. This is a detailed topic that we can talk about for ages. In fact, even though this episode is only about 30 minutes long, I talked to Trip for a full hour beforehand, and I felt like we were just getting started. And that was before we even pressed the record button. And so there's just so much information out there to help you, but I wanted to focus on and have Trip focus on some of the ways you can begin to protect yourself. So this is a great episode that you're going to want to listen to in its entirety. Now, just a quick note before we jump into the episode is I recorded this episode at my office. And so you might hear a few more footsteps than normal than you would in a traditional interview. And also, I was furiously typing during the interview is there was so much information I was writing down and collecting and didn't want to forget. And because of that, you might hear some keyboard noises as Trip is speaking from time to time. I have this great microphone and unfortunately it picks up everything. So apologies in advance for that and for the sound quality, but I promise you, you're going to really want to take notes and get the information that is in this interview. Without further ado, here's an interview with Trip Elix. Today on the show, I have Trip Elix. He is a former hacker, published author, and privacy expert. Trip, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Trip, you know, after speaking with you and learning about you and what you discuss, I know there's a ton of information on almost every individual when it comes to their data. Can you just give us a sense of how much data is being collected on the average person? And also, I want to discuss who can access it.
Sure. In the question of what's being collected, everything from credit card transactions, the information flow coming from the internet and the apps on your cell phone, it all basically gets culminated into a few different databases. There's one big database that's out there that's probably second in size to the NSA database. That company is Axiom. And if your listeners want to are curious about any company on the internet, simply type in Axiom and then space Facebook into Google, or Axiom Twitter into Google, or Axiom some department of motor vehicles into Google, and they have relationships with pretty much everybody, including our Congress. What Just for Marketing means to a lot of people when they use that little loyalty card at their local grocery store is they believe it's for inventory control. Well, not really. It's to know more about you, specifically about what your tastes are. I mean, if they sell out of Fruit Loops on the shelf, they know that already in their tracking system on their register. They don't need to know which individual is buying Fruit Loops. So the Just for Marketing thing is really a myth. Literally, anyone can buy anything about anyone else. That's the idea of selling data. And data carriers, one of the big companies that started the, quote, list business. The list business is when you get into the, you are a Fruit Loops lover. Host is going to love this. But if somebody wants to buy a list of people that buy a particular product, they can get their information and contact them in marketing. Of course, we know marketing as spam, telemarketing, and junk mail. These companies, this process really started with one of the credit card companies and expanded. And today, your information is sold in two different ways. Either you're a member of a list, or if I have your name and date of birth and your address, which are relatively easy for anybody to find, I can get what you buy. And that's called a portfolio. I was made aware of that from one of the people that worked for the Federal Trade Commission. And since then, I've gone to a couple data brokers just testing to see how much it costs to buy all the information about you. And the range goes from about $30 out to about $60. But literally, it costs zero. If I got into that business myself, signed a couple contracts, the data set for your personal information, everything you buy, go, everywhere you surf on the internet, and coming soon, everything you watch on television, all are available in a little portfolio with a wholesale price of $2.
So let's talk about that for a second. So you said that it's clear that basically every credit card purchase, they can track computer from your web browsing habits to soon the shows that you watch. You mentioned something briefly, like what about the information on your phone in the apps? You said something about that. Why don't you talk about that for a second?
There are a lot of applications that people... We got acclimated and pushed and bullied into a process. And by the way, this is unique only to the United States. The rest of the world, this doesn't apply. Mexico has privacy laws. Canada has privacy laws. All of Europe, just the United States. We got bullied into a process through attrition, displaying a "Do you agree" box. Well, the "Do you agree" box at the beginning of the process was pretty benign. Do you agree that your information is going to be stored on our system? Went from that to, do you agree that your device and anything you have on it becomes our property? Windows' latest update to their Windows drive actually changes the property right of anything you put in it to the ownership of Microsoft. So the "do you agree" things that are on your cell phone, many of those applications that are out there do copy your contact information, do copy your text messages, do copy your call patterns. And unfortunately, our country is has allowed countries to spy on us as well. So along with major corporations in the United States, we also have the governments of many nations trying to track us to find out who we are and who we're related to or who we have a relationship with in order to do the quote, spy game. The problem in the United States is just compounded. There are apps that are on people's phones right now. One of them was made famous for the flashlight from China, and that was really to steal the contact information off of the phone.
Right. So yeah, let me jump in for a second. So it sounds like basically what I'm getting from you is that everything from the apps on your phone, your social media, your computer, your credit card, everything that you do is being tracked. A few kind of follow-ups in that regard. The first is, actually, why don't you give us a little bit of your background and history as and to how you know this information and how you've gotten access to it and learned about it? Because I know you're not a crazy conspiracy theorist. You actually worked in this field.
Yeah, actually, a long time ago, I worked as what's called a skip tracer. And my job was to find the guy that didn't make his bail and the bounty hunter couldn't find him, or somebody that skipped out for the banking industry and didn't make their car payments. So before the internet, I was actually buying the company I worked for, actually had contracts with some of the same companies so that I could use it to track down where that individual was. And this is before the internet. It was pretty easy then, and I realized that identity theft would be pretty easy for somebody like me. And now today, you don't have to have any skill to look up another person's information, just a couple bucks.
Right. I actually think that's a perfect transition to some of the issues that a lot of our listeners are facing, and that they're getting divorced or are just past their divorce, and their previous spouse has access to all of their personal information, or at least used to, and it seems pretty easy for them to potentially be stalked, or actually in some cases that I have, as we speak, is mysteriously the spouse still seems to know everything that's going on in someone's life, even though they're separated and trying to get divorced. It sounds like for the average person, being an ex-spouse in this case, or soon-to-be ex-spouse, that they have pretty easy access and efficient access to your information, either personally or use of maybe an investigator.
Yes, and that's very true. But there are some things that somebody that's going through this can do. One is, if you've got enough money, meaning that you can afford to go buy another computer, Start there. Separate your cell phone, not meaning separate and go out and get another contract with the same carrier, but change carriers. You can port numbers now, so you can keep the number, but change to a different carrier just so that that person doesn't have access at the carrier level. As far as the strategy that a lot of people fall into when they're trying to be private, there's a lot of people out there that just believe that, well, I don't put any information out there, so nobody can track what I'm doing. That's really not the case. When I investigate or look at someone, the people that are trying to hide from the system are a lot easier to track because they have less information out there. But to defeat that, to defeat the stalker, what I encourage people to do is this. One, sign up for Facebook. If you're not already on it, get on it. Okay, this sounds odd. Create a profile and make sure that profile is completely public. That way, that stranger can look at the inside of that Facebook. You got to remember that you're posting this for that other individual. And then find some events and start going to events. things that you'd never had interested in before, but you don't really have to go. Just, you know, saying that you're going to go to a ballet or go to a swing dance thing. Maybe they'll show up at the swing dance thing and you stayed at home. Oh, well.
Right. You told me a story that you had done that in practice.
Yes. I had somebody that's a friend now that was more than slightly interested in what I was doing. And I actually have a large social circles. I'm active in my area and I go to a lot of events. Well, I noticed that it wasn't just commonality. I would go to something that put on Facebook that I was going to an event and she would show up. So what I ended up doing was making my circle a little bit larger and putting that I was going to events that I had no interest in. And I did that for about 6 months and that interest suddenly waned simply because they had no idea where I was going.
Right. So it sounds like you should counterintuitively, but you should put out more information, not less, because it kind of can overwhelm and confuse a potential stalker. In this case, we're speaking in the context of divorce, but an ex-spouse.
Right. And the other thing is telephone. If you want it, I have about 800 numbers on my cell phone. A lot of those numbers, I have no idea who they are. And that's fine. They're in my contact list. So if somebody grabs my contact list because I put the wrong app on my phone, they're going to find that I've got relationship with senators, prosecutors, a few judges. I have relationships with plumbers, an aircraft mechanic, all kinds of people. Pick the person that's real to me.
Right.
You have to know the calling pattern. And you can buy that information and find out who I talk to and who I email. But the low end that is going to look at that data is just more garbage. The more garbage you put out there, the harder it is to sort through.
And then what about when it comes to an email address? What should people do there?
Email addresses, if we're in a relationship and the other person had your email your password. And this is the important thing about passwords. One, a password should not be a word, ever. And two, if it's the internet, we never tell the truth. No real dates of birth, no real teachers. One of these companies out there has a product that they sell, which is called the security question. And what they've done is they've groomed a number of utilities and other things that people use for securing their information, and they actually sell it. So if I want to compromise somebody, I can simply, as a criminal, pay my $29.95 and get a list of everything that that person has ever used in the history of the internet. Security question.
Wow.
So I can go to the bank and know that your first grade teacher's name was Mrs. Smith. I know that your first car was a Datsun that was green.
So it sounds like, yeah, you need to be, well, you need to be false and kind of change up your answers for everything that you had previously used.
The most powerful tool that you can buy today is a dollar notebook that you get from a junk store, because what you should do with that is first put all your passwords in it and leave it at home. You don't need to carry it around with you. If you need to carry a copy around with you for important passwords, leave it in your pocket or your purse. Then buy a second notebook. Writing these things down, the internet is complex, and this is the thing about passwords. Like I said before, no words. Dictionary words, if you've ever looked for the definition of a word on the internet, you can define them. Well, all the dictionary words are out there. So there are programs that will go to websites and try every word in the dictionary and every word combined with it over and over again if they want to try to get into an account. And that's what compromised Yahoo to begin with, was a dictionary attack. That's what compromised AOL, as a dictionary attack. So how you get around that? How do we create a good password? I like to use the seeded password. So what I mean by that is we take a password that we're going to use and we basically make it into, as a, far as a single word, we'll make it into a series of letters and numbers. And I'll give you an example. The word black.
Mm-hmm.
Capital B, lowercase l, the at symbol, an open paren, which is the shift 9, and then a lowercase k and a 1. Now, that's my seed. What I mean by that's my seed is if I want to go to Yahoo, whatever it says in the upper left, the new password for Yahoo is YAH, my seed, black, OO. If I'm going to go to Google, GOO, first three characters, my seed, and then the last. That makes a different password for every system, and you would need to know that you're using a key in trying to hack it. Plus, if it's over 7 or over 8, 7 or 8 characters now, and it has uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and symbols, it makes it a real nightmare to try to decrypt that. I mean, there are pieces of equipment that can guess that password relatively easy, but quite truthfully, that's used for other things, like trying to get into your accountant's office, not trying to get into your email.
Right. That's high powered stuff. But I think if you're likely, at least my listeners are likely dealing with an ex-spouse, that will probably be pretty sufficient to protect themselves or at least make it a lot harder to get access to an email address.
And don't use the word black. Use a word that you make up. Individuality counts. Yeah, but go out to the internet. Every site needs a different password, okay? You write these in your book. You leave the book at home. Email, of course, is on your cell phone, and you want to access it, some of the social media. So write the password down in the book.
Right. And actually, you mentioned the home a few times. When we were discussing earlier, before we started recording, you mentioned that there's a lot that you can do to protect your home, and there's also a lot of things that can happen in terms of introducing devices and other issues that can actually lead to a compromise in some of the security you have at home. Can you talk a little bit about both?
Sure. Well, one of the things is if we've got somebody that we've been in a relationship that is controlling and has narcissistic, meaning they only care about themselves and you have become their property. There's a few things that you can do to protect your home space. One is if you live in a house, one of the easiest things to do is get a camera system installed for the outside of the home and record everything that's going on around your home. There was an instance where somebody I know did have an ex-spouse that was visiting the home a lot. So one of the things that we did is I actually installed a camera to record everything that happened on the street. Now, the camera, of course, recorded a whole bunch of traffic. And I'm sure that when he saw the camera in it while he was in his car, looking at the camera, these people don't want to be caught. So the problems around the home suddenly disappeared. So by doing these things and being proactive, putting security lights. But the Internet of Things, giving outside access to that camera system, can also be a detriment because somebody on the outside can watch you. So again, strong passwords or no internet access. Do you really need to look at the outside of the home while you're at work? And these sites that are out there that offer access to through third parties, some of those have open access even though you've got passwords, and there are lists of camera systems on the dark web. You just type in open camera, and if you want to be a voyeur, you can certainly sit and be unentertained by watching people in their living room and watching their yards. But I've seen it.
Wow.
I think that's helpful. It sounds like it's a double-edged sword, potentially, and that getting a camera can certainly prevent someone from accessing, or at least deter someone from accessing your home or physical property. But at the same time, even a camera system can have its vulnerabilities.
Yeah, and there are other things when you're dealing with an ex-spouse. One of the things that I've seen in the past is the little office supply stores will sell these recorders, audio recorders, for cheap, $50 for 64 hours of time or 48 hours of time. I really don't remember what the time thing was. But if you take one of those little devices and stick it in a plush toy and give it to your kid will take it into the home of your spouse. And when the plush toy comes back, you can certainly listen to everything that happened in the house. So just being aware of what the child has with them is important. And the other thing that's really important when dealing with children is, and especially when you've got an ex-abusive spouse involved, is monitor the communication between the child and the ex-spouse. I'm not saying discuss the things with the child, but make sure that that ex-spouse isn't trying to poison the child with words, and act on it if you do hear that going on. I've seen that happen.
No, I think that makes sense. I have one last question for you before we wrap up is, you know, when you're dealing with an ex-spouse already, they have, you know, basically, or in most cases, all of your personal information, and you can only, I mean, you can do a lot of the things that you recommend to protect yourself. What do you think about these identity protection services like the LifeLocks and the other ones that you hear advertised? Are those useful as well for people, or should you avoid those?
Kathy Brill calls LifeLock a expensive scam. Kathy Brill is in charge, is the director of the Federal Trade. He used to put his Social Security number out on the TV commercial.
I remember those. I remember seeing those, yeah.
Four cars, $20,000 in cash, and a house. That's what his Social Security number was used for in theft. Now, of course, he didn't pay for it, but the people that sold the cars and the person, the system, cost us money. Eventually, theft costs us. Just because the price gets shifted and you don't pay for it, well, banks certainly don't pay for it. Our tax dollars pay for it. You know, LifeLock and these things, if you go out to my website, tripelix.com, TRIPELIX.com, there's a paper that I have there called Avoiding Identity Theft. Right at the top, just put in your email address and hit, and it'll forward you a copy of my paper. And inside of it, you can set freezes on the credit industry. There are four major pieces of credit in the industry itself. And what I mean is there are four entities, the three credit reporting companies and check systems. Check systems is used in the banking industry, and by signing up with a freeze, it will block other people from using your information and opening a new account. And that's the most important feature. It, you know, our credit system is screwed up, and I'm working on a movement to actually fix some of the components of our credit system. It's not ready yet, but it'll be done shortly. But if your listeners want to contact me, just type in TRIPELIX into Google. I'm on every system. Just shoot me a message. I respond to everybody. So if you got a question, just ask.
That's excellent. Well, we will include a link not only to your website, the paper, and your social media profiles. I know that you are everywhere online, and you provide such helpful information that most people don't even realize is happening to them. So Trip, thank you so much for coming on to the show today.
You bet, and it was great for you to have me on.
We're almost done with the episode, but don't leave quite yet. Before you go, I want to make sure that you get the help you deserve. All you have to do is go to divorceandyourmoney.com, and the first thing that you do when you get there is sign up for the email list. You'll see a little box that says get updates and tips, and I will send you exclusive articles, content, and information that you will not find anywhere else, and it gets to go directly to you. The second thing that you do is consider getting one-on-one financial coaching. Look, divorce attorneys are good, but attorneys are not financial experts, and they can make many financial mistakes. I mean, even in the last episode, did they explain these details to you? Did they even bring them up, consider them? And I understand, because finances are really, really complicated. That's why there's over 100 episodes explaining different financial concepts. And sometimes you get to the point where the general information in the podcast, while helpful, you have the question is, how does it apply to me? How does it apply to my situation, my life, and my divorce? And the only way to find out is to go for the one-on-one coaching sessions where I get to help you across the United States, whether you're in your California, Texas, Ohio, Illinois, Florida, New York, everywhere in between. We work by phone, email, and in person. All you have to do is click on the coaching tab and fill out a few short questions, and we'll set up an introductory call to see if I can help you. The sooner you get started, the better. Even if you're still preparing financial information or waiting on your spouse to prepare financial information, we can help with that. Or if you're in the middle of negotiating and trying to decide what's right for you. But here's the deal, is once you've signed on the dotted line, you know, the mistakes today are pretty much permanent. And I don't want you to make costly mistakes during divorce. So be sure to consider the coaching, and the sooner you get started, the better off you will be. Finally, on divorceandyourmoney.com, there's just a ton of great resources on there. You can subscribe to the podcast, and if you have iTunes, leave a review, which helps other people discover this free information. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst. Thank you for listening.